Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
And we are back. Iceman Insights, starring Michael Shockley, senior writer, webmaster, linked by Puck Daddy into the hockey universe, the one, the only, Michael the Shocker Shockley. How we doing?
Fantastic.
Probably not as good as the Icemen are.
I don't know. I'm riding pretty high after Puck Daddy.
That's pretty awesome. Cool. But you look at your Icemen this weekend beating Fort Wayne Comets suck twice.
Yeah.
And then already on the bus, already down in Orlando, enjoying the sun, skating once a day, and then playing golf and doing whatever you do when you're in Orlando before you have to play Friday night.
Yeah, that bus ride to Florida, I'm sure, got a heck of a lot more fun and easy and laid back because of the winds over Fort Wayne.
Yep.
Before Friday and Saturday, things were not looking pretty. And if you lose both of those games, too, and have to take that long of a trip, it would not be fun. But
well, it still probably wouldn't be too bad going to Florida.
But it would be worse than it is given the current circumstances.
So 2-3-1 since the last show. Thank you all for allowing me to have my vacation last week. Ivy and I rocked it in the deep snow of northern lower Michigan.
Yeah, it 2-3-1, and it started out 0-3-1. We won't spend much time on the previous week, the road trip. Wednesday the 6th, the Icemen lost 5-4 in overtime at Kalamazoo. Once again, took a 2-0 lead, but couldn't keep it. Paul Dayton in net, made 34 saves. Dylan Clark had 2 goals. Josh Beaulieu, a goal and an assist. And Todd Robinson and Daniel Tatro had 2 assists each. Friday the 8th, lost 5-2 at South Kakalaki.
Kakalaki.
Dayton had 24 saves. In the other net, Jeff Jakaitis was in net for South Carolina.
Yeah, we remember him.
Made 31 saves. Jim McKenzie and Jason Dale had the Iceman goals. And then Saturday the 9th, went to Gwinnett and lost 6-5. It wasn't really that close, though. It was 6-2 with 6 minutes left, and then we scored
three goals.
That's
when I turned it off.
Yeah. Dayton, 30 saves on 36 shots. Josh Beaulieu had a goal and 2 assists. Kevin Baker, a goal and an assist. Todd Robinson, 4 assists. Nathan Moon, Phil Plant, and Jake Overmeyer also scored. In all three of the games on that road trip, the Icemen played with just 9 forwards instead of 10 and 5 D instead of 6. And Wednesday and Saturday on that trip, one of the 9 forwards was Jake Overmeyer.
Yeah.
So it was not exactly an optimum lineup.
Now, speaking of optimum-ish, didn't one or two of those games, did Ficarelli have to broadcast using the cell phone?
I think
and
so,
he didn't
yeah.
have the phone charger, couldn't find the phone charger?
Yeah, there was some sort of issue going on, some technical difficulties. I didn't get to listen to them, but I saw posts on Facebook about some problems going on, and that one of them, they couldn't get the normal equipment to work and had to use a cell phone, and whether, I don't know if it lasted the whole game or not, but certainly not optimum performance.
Optimum. Yeah, it sounded horrible too.
So then things got better, thankfully, as the Icemen returned home and got some healthy bodies back. Last Wednesday, the 13th, lost 2-1 against Toledo at home. That game was actually tied until the final minute. It wasn't necessarily that evenly played. It probably would have been 6 or 7-1 if not for Dayton standing on his head. He played exceptionally well, had 40 saves. Daniel Tatro had the Iceman's only goal, but he also lost his man in the defensive zone on Toledo's first goal. And then they got a kind of a fluky goal at the end in the final minute when they had a penalty expire, and it led to an odd man rush, and they ended up getting the game winner inside the final minute. But at least there was promise there. The Icemen certainly played better than they had on the road trip, and just fell about a minute short of gaining a point. So that was progress, and then things got much better when the Comets came to town on Friday. A dominant and very fun for those in attendance 6-1 victory over the Comets. Dayton again played well, made 37 saves. Kevin Baker, 2 goals and 2 assists. Todd Robinson, 1 goal and 3 assists. Josh Beaulieu, 4 assists. A rarity. Beaulieu had 4 points that night and was not one of the three stars because
wow.
Baker and Todd and Dayton were the three stars. That was actually my call that night, and I waffled back and forth, but I ended up deciding that I thought Dayton played well enough early when the game was still close, and he made several really nice saves that he certainly deserved recognition again.
Yep.
Trent Vogelhuber had 1 goal and 1 assist in his first game back from injury. And Matt Krug and Jason Dale also scored. Attendance on Friday was 7,301, and they got entertainment right off the bat. Mark Cody dropped the gloves and fought Kaylee Schrock 1 second into the game, and that's just because you have to run the clock 1 second, because they had actually dropped the gloves, actually, I think, before the puck was dropped, which is technically illegal, but they let them spar and move on. After that, though, the Comets were pretty flat. The Icemen, credit to the Icemen for taking full advantage of it, but Fort Wayne just did not look like they wanted to be there. The Icemen, on the other hand, wanted to be there too much, because for the first time that I think I've ever seen, a team got called for too many men on the ice 3 times in a single game.
Wow.
So they were a little too anxious to be on the ice. But
might not be used to having healthy players in the lineup, too.
Yeah, that's
true. Everyone's used to double shifting.
Everybody's too tired to jump out there too soon. But, yeah, that was a very fun game, a very good win. At some point in the, I think it was in the third period, Jonathan Lintner from the Courier and Press was there covering it, and he was sitting next to me in the press box. And the last time he had been there covering a game was when Karpowicz had played really well in net, and I mentioned to him that he should talk about Karpowicz in his story. And right after I did that, Karp gave up 3 goals in, like, the next 5 minutes. So on Friday, Lintner asked me if I wanted to jinx somebody by mentioning how well they had been playing, and I thought about it for a second, and then I said, "You look over there on the bench, that backup goalie, Kevin Moore, he is opening the door like a champ." And Lintner looked at him, and he laughed, and he said, "It's like Mozart with a paintbrush."
Yeah.
And then a couple seconds later, he realized Mozart wasn't a painter.
Oh, I thought he meant that on purpose.
No, it was. So then I said, "It's like Picasso with a violin." Anyway, yeah, didn't jinx anybody. I kept my mouth shut because I didn't want Dayton to fall apart if I mentioned how well he was playing.
And you just think about how much work he has gotten in since Karpowicz got called up.
Yeah,
and,
six straight starts and counting.
And he's played well, too.
Yeah, he didn't. I mean, his stats were not good on the road trip, but I don't think he was getting a whole lot of help by all accounts.
Well, and like you said, you got Jake Obermeyer in as your 9th forward. Nothing against Jake, but he's not a forward at this
and
level.
And then
you
only got 5D, too.
Yep.
So, yeah.
You do the best you can.
Not optimum.
Optimum.
Yes. But interestingly, Friday, that was actually the first time this season that the Blues, Rivermen, and Icemen all won on the same night. And never this season have the Blue Jackets, Springfield Falcons, and Icemen won on the same night. Of course, there haven't exactly been a whole lot of chances because the Icemen have only won 3 games since the NHL season started.
I think that's the same with Columbus.
Yeah, they haven't won very much either. So the pickings are slim on that front. That's all I had on Friday. Moving on, Saturday the 16th, the Icemen went up to Fort Wayne for the back half of this home-and-home and won 4-2 in front of a packed house of over 10,000 fans, including a couple dozen Icemen fans went up for the trip, and they were entertained a lot more than the Comets fans. Dayton, excellent again, 28 saves on 30 shots, including a penalty shot save.
That was a big one, too.
Yeah.
Icemen on the power play, they had just stolen the lead, back on the power play again, and then Risk gets away and gets pulled down from behind, and penalty shot, chance to tie it all up, and Dayton makes the big save.
Yeah,
and that kind of broke their hearts right there.
That can be a big momentum swing both ways, depending on how it goes. So, yeah, that was very big. In that game, Kevin Baker, again, 2 goals. Donnie Harris with 1 goal and 1 assist, and Dylan Clark had 1 goal. So we've seen the last week, especially these last 3 games, that line of Todd Robinson, Kevin Baker, and Josh Beaulieu has been red hot. And that's a line that they've produced here and there, but that's supposed to be our top line.
Yep.
And if we're going to win games, they have to stay hot. And it's the proof's in the pudding in these last couple games that when they're hot and putting points on the board, this team can win hockey games, and it's refreshing and wonderful to see.
Well, the proof is also in the ECHL hardware, because Kenny Baker has
R2-D2.
Yes. Darn it. Kevin Baker has been given ECHL Player of the Week honors.
Yeah. He's got 5 goals and 4 assists in his last 4 games.
They credited him with 4 goals and 3 assists for the week.
Over the weekend, right.
So, and then that's second Iceman player as ECHL Player of the Week.
Yeah,
with Dylan Clark.
Dylan Clark earlier.
And Dan Gender, who we traded for, or part of the trade for Kevin Baker,
right.
Also won it once this year when he had that, he had four goals in that one game.
Yeah,
that kind of propelled him. But he has since left Orlando, so we have officially won that trade.
Yeah. And yeah, good for Kevin Baker, too. That's it's good that he's gotten some recognition. I think he's generally played pretty well. It hasn't always shown up on the score sheet, but I think in general he's played pretty well since that trade. He's now up to 24 points in 28 games with the Icemen, so that's not too shabby.
Nope.
You'll take that. He's not the only one, though. Like I said, that whole line, Todd Robinson has been really even hotter than Baker if you look at total points. He's got 11 points in his last 4 games, which Baker, that bum, only has 9.
Yeah. Well, and I've watched Robinson. He's closing in. Ficarelli's talked about it. You see it in the ECHL notes as well, that Robinson leads the league in power play assists, and mm-hmm. that's a nice stat. But he's crawling into league leaders for points for the league.
Yeah, he's up to 7th through Monday's games. He's up to 7th with 55 points, and consider he missed 8 games
yep.
with injury. So he's, again, well over a point per game, and leading the league in assists, 7th in scoring. And he's propelling Baker and Beaulieu in part. You know, they're playing well on their own, too, but that whole line is clicking. Todd's making the assists, and Beaulieu and Baker are burying the puck when they get the chances. Beaulieu is just as hot as the other two. He's got 4 goals and 8 assists in February, so 12 points in 8 games. And he is up to 11th in league scoring.
Huh.
And he has now eclipsed his career high. He's up to 51 points, so this is his best season as a professional. So kudos to him, too. But it's not just those three. The other player that's been red hot, like we said, is Paul Dayton. Over the last 3 games, he's been among the 3 stars in all 3 of those games. He's got a 167 goals against average and a 957 save percentage.
That's sick.
Yeah, it is. You keep that up, we're going to win a lot of games. So some people heating up, some key people, and if they can continue that, then perhaps the Icemen can win more games than they lose down here down the stretch. It might not make a difference as far as the playoff picture is concerned, but at least hopefully the season can end on a high note.
Beaulieu, he'd lead the team with the 22 goals?
Yes, I believe
so. Yeah. Playoffs, I don't know if anyone's spending their putting their money down for playoff tickets or not. I am not.
But you can.
But you can. Glad we have that option. I am not. But this is that time of year where you got to play spoiler.
Yeah.
And this is also that time of the year where the agents are saying, you got to give me something to work with so I can find you either a contract for next year with this team or somewhere else in the ECHL or the CHL. So
yeah,
this is time to make a statement about your abilities for GMs next year.
Put up or shut up, because if your numbers have been bad all season and you're on a last-place team, there's not going to be people banging down your door for work next season. So, yeah, you got to make an impression here down the stretch. Even if the team's not going to be in the playoffs, you there are individual reasons for playing well, and then also as a team, you want to be a spoiler. So I guess for a lot of Iceman fans, if we can't be in the playoffs, the next best thing is keeping the Comets out
of
the playoffs.
Yes, exactly. That's an interesting stat that you have. We only have 3 wins since the NHL season began.
Yeah.
And here we thought, well, there was some rumors that all these other teams are loaded with AHL talent, and when the NHL comes back in, you're going to see us really jump to the forefront, and I guess it's been quite the opposite of that.
Well,
and we've continued to have the injury issue.
Yeah, the injuries have been a big problem, and on top of that, just I think while we didn't get hit as far as a big number of players, there were a few players that we had that were being consistently productive, and they're the ones that got called up.
Yep.
So even though we didn't have maybe the quantity that other teams had, we had the quality hit that perhaps some other teams didn't, where they may not have been losing top-end guys, but we were.
Tragic number update.
Yeah, this is something I'm going to do until we're officially eliminated from the playoffs. The tragic number for the Icemen, for those that don't understand the way a tragic number works, it's basically the opposite of a magic number. When you're fighting for a playoff spot, the magic number is the number of points you need to gain combined with the number of points the team that's chasing you needs to lose or leave on the table, basically. And that's what would clinch your playoff berth. Well, the tragic number is the opposite. It's the number of points that we lose combined with the number of points that eighth place gains, and that's the number that would result in us being officially eliminated from the playoffs. The back-to-back wins over the Comets snapped a 1-8-1 stretch, so there's been a lot of points left on the board lately that have made the tragic number relatively within reach now. And we're just 2-9-4 in our last 15 road games, and considering the fact that two-thirds of the games left in the season are on the road, that doesn't bode well.
Especially in sunny Florida.
Yeah.
Of course, I think sunny Florida is going to get soaked in water pretty soon, so it doesn't matter. But anyways, back away from the forecast.
So, yeah, realistically, the season is probably over. I mean, it would take a minor miracle to have the Icemen make the playoffs at this point, but we're not yet super close to being mathematically eliminated. I don't think we'll be mathematically eliminated until at least March at some point. I don't think it's going to happen within the next week or two.
March is in 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Through Monday the 18th, we have 43 points with 18 games left, which means our maximum possible point total is 79. Currently, the eighth place team in the East has 60, which means the magic number for eighth place, the tragic number for the Icemen is 20. So the combination of points lost by the Icemen and points gained by eighth place, regardless of which team it is, you have to look at the position. So whoever is in eighth, every point that they get in addition to 60 takes off that tragic number. And every point the Icemen leave on the board takes off the tragic number. So if in a same night the Icemen lose and eighth place wins, the tragic number drops from 20 to 16. So we could be talking about that number getting down to zero. Probably, I think it's probably going to be early March, which, yeah, is not that far away, but I don't think it's going to happen within the next week.
Sounds like a fun betting game.
Yeah.
Put the poll out
there. Yeah, put the poll out. What date will the Icemen officially be eliminated? The sad thing is I saw the ECHL put out a release the other day that, despite the fact that they are in last place, even worse than the Icemen, the Bakersfield Condors are only like 6 points out of the playoffs because there's only 9 teams in the Western Conference and 8 of them make it.
Do they? They don't go with 4 out
of them? No, they go 8 as well. So it's much easier to make the playoffs in the Western Conference. In theory, the Icemen could end up having a better record, in theory, than 2 or 3 teams out west that end up making the playoffs just because the conferences are so imbalanced. But yeah, the top 3 teams in the West have already clinched, but yet Bakersfield, way down in last, is still alive. It's just one of those odd situations produced by the fact that there's only 9 teams in the West, whereas there's 14 in the East.
And before anyone starts crying and whining about it's not fair, blah, 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 if the Icemen want to play in the Western Conference, I'm sure that the league has no problem letting us handle all that travel.
Yeah.
So just some old history. The ECHL was primarily East Coast Hockey League, and then there was the West Coast Hockey League.
Right.
It folded years ago, and instead of just letting all those teams perish and all those players perish, all those jobs, the ECHL stepped in, bought the remnants of the league, mm-hmm. put it under their umbrella, and have built it up to a great affiliation for the NHL teams out on that West Coast. So
right.
That's the purpose of it, and blah, 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 playoffs. it doesn't really matter. They're just trying to keep hockey alive on that West Coast.
Yeah, and ultimately, while it's easier to qualify, it still ends up being that one team comes out of each conference.
Yep.
So if you want to win the championship, the road is the same. It may be a little easier in the West, but you still got to win the same number of playoff series. You got to win the same number of games. And if you don't stack up against the team that wins the other conference, then you're not going to win the Cup.
In my business opinion, I don't want to come in eighth or seventh place in the West. I would rather miss the playoffs entirely, because eighth place means you are now on the bus up to Alaska.
Yeah.
And you talk about spending, and gas is a little bit more expensive in California and up in there than it is here in Indiana. I would rather just miss it completely than come in eighth place and have to go to Alaska.
You get to pay a lot of money, you get to travel to Alaska, and you probably get shellacked in the first round. So, yeah, perhaps for the pocketbook, it's better to just call it a day and finish ninth.
Our next segment, our best segment, 3 minutes of no talking from either of us. Shockers, hockey, rock song of the week.
All right, this is a song that I used to use as a second or third period entrance theme at Swander, and this is in honor of Sunday being the Daytona 500. This is a song that has often been used as an auto racing theme, and I think for a few years when TNT started getting NASCAR coverage, they actually used this as their theme song for NASCAR races. A good old-fashioned headbanging rock song. This is Fuel by Metallica.
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire. Pick me dead. And I'm
And we are back. Iceman Insights, Michael Shockley, the Dirty D. Iceman Insights here on Amusement Park Radio on 96.9 WYIR, the music bomb. The longest hour of hockey talk radio in the history of hockey talk. And speaking of long discussions, transaction and injury report.
Yeah, killed a couple trees to print this one off. We are now 54 games into the season, and we are up to 317 man games lost due to injury and illness. Currently, five players are on the shelf. We are also now up to 26 different affiliate call-ups involving 15 different players. So the numbers are quite staggering, and we're still 18 games from the end of the season, so they're going to get even more staggering. I'm not 100% sure we're going to get to 400 man games lost because we're starting to get a little healthier, but it's going to be close. We'll see. 2 weeks of transactions and injuries to recap. Back to Wednesday, the 6th. On that day, Anthony Nigro was recalled to Peoria because in Peoria, Jay Baraball, who had just returned from injury, got hurt again and is now expected to miss the rest of the season. So Nigro may be up there for good. We'll see.
And what's interesting about that, as we jump off on a quick tangent, is there is no guarantee of what affiliations, if any, we will have next year. So at this point in the season, you start wondering, is that the last time we have saw Anthony Nigro forever?
Yeah, it's quite possible. My guess is we will end up with either or both of the Blues and Blue Jackets again next season. But yeah, nothing is guaranteed. You never know. And we won't know until summer.
I'm not sure about the Blue Jackets, just in the case that John Davidson is their new GM. Yeah. They just hired in a new coach, and he may redo that entire system. And it'd be interesting to look back and see what the Blues did the last couple of years before Hitchcock came in there. Because I'm pretty sure that was John Davidson's setup. So a little bit of a hint of
they didn't actually have an affiliate. They had been affiliated with Alaska, and then they dropped that affiliation. Peoria was still affiliated with Alaska, but the Blues were not officially affiliated with any ECHL team for a couple of years. But part of that is because Alaska is just not geographically compatible. Now, if they decide that they're getting enough out of being affiliated with Evansville, which is 3 hours away, I think they would probably be more inclined, if they're on the fence, to say, yeah, we'll keep that affiliation, just because a three-hour drive is a lot different than a 10-hour flight.
Yeah, it's all what kind of prospects you draft and what you do with them. And if John Davidson's track record is no ECHL affiliation, there's a good chance that Columbus will not have an ECHL affiliation, especially a team that's trying to save money.
Exactly. So, my guess is the most likely is we keep the Blues and lose the Blue Jackets. I wouldn't totally rule out keeping them both. I would be pretty surprised if we end up with somebody else, if neither of them are affiliates next year, but we're affiliated with some other NHL team. And I would be really surprised if we go independent. I don't think that's going
to happen. No, I don't think. I think any opportunity we get to have two teams, we will do it to save money.
Yeah, and, quite possible.
And of course, I'm always rooting for Toronto, to who has no affiliation this year, and they put players all over the place.
Sending them.
Yeah.
Well, there was talk that they were wanting to affiliate with the Comets, and the Comets said, no thanks.
Yep. So, good call by them. But anyways, back to Thursday the 7th.
Actually, we're still on Wednesday the 6th.
Oh, sorry. That's right, I have to cheer here.
Yeah. After Nigro got called up, the good news is that day Phil Plante came back to the active roster.
He's played well.
Yeah, he has. He played that night in Kalamazoo. Jim McKenzie went to reserve that night. He did not play. Also on the 6th, we signed Kevin Moore as our rookie emergency backup goaltender since Karpovich is still called up. Moore actually... interesting ties to the Icemen on multiple fronts. He had been playing in the Federal Hockey League with the New York Bluefins.
I like it.
Which is a team that had actually just folded that Monday the 4th. They were 5-24-1, so you think we got it bad.
Whew. Yep.
He had pretty terrible numbers for them, a 602 goals against and an 869 save percentage. But when your team's 5-24-1, the goaltending is not the only problem.
Yep.
So hard to read much into his stats, but... he's probably not going to see any work unless something crazy happens, but he is the emergency backup and still is as of now. Interestingly, though, prior to the Bluefins folding, their roster also included former Iceman players Chris Campanelli and goaltender Kira Hurley. And the other connection to the Iceman is before he played for the Federal League, he played 4 minutes total in two games in college at UMass Amherst. And in 2010-2011, the starter there was a senior by the name of Paul Dayton.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So again, we see a little bit of that connection.
Yeah, it's who you know. Yep. References. So that was everything on Wednesday the 6th. On Thursday the 7th, there were no transactions. Friday the 8th, McKenzie was activated and played that night. Plante went back to reserve just as part of the
that was by design.
Working back in slowly. And then Saturday the 9th, they flip-flopped again. Plante went back to the active roster and played that night, and McKenzie went back to reserve. Sunday the 10th, there were no transactions, and then things started to get interesting. On Monday the
11th. Because of Valentine's Day, everything always begins to get interesting.
Yeah. Monday the 11th, Paul Karpowicz was returned from Peoria after serving as the backup there for three games because Yaroslav Halak was activated from IR by the Blues. Well, the problem was that night when Halak was supposed to make his first start back from injury, he retweaked his groin during pregame warmups. Brian Elliott made the surprise start after all of the Yaroslav Halak fantasy hockey owners had already slotted him into their rosters. And Halak decided to go back to the shelf with his retweaked groin. Therefore, Karpowicz made a U-turn on I-64 somewhere and turned around and went back to Peoria. And he is still there as of when we record this.
Yeah, that's a tough situation up in St. Louis.
Yeah.
With Halak getting injured and Brian Elliott has not played well at all.
No.
And
then they call up Jake Allen from Peoria, and he's been lights out.
Yep.
So it's going to be interesting to see what they do. My guess is still that they're going to send Allen back down once they know Halak is healthy. It sounds like right now they're not committing either way. But they have games this week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Saturday. And the expectation is they're going to carry three goalies through Saturday's game and then reevaluate where things are, both with Halak's health and probably how Allen is playing. But the smart bet is after Saturday's game, either Sunday or Monday at some point early next week, Allen will be sent back down to Peoria, no matter how well he's playing, because if they send Elliott down to Peoria, he has to clear waivers first. And I don't think they're ready to completely give up on him to where they would take the risk of losing him.
No, I can see him as a trade deadline deal.
Yeah, could be. But it sounds like they think they've found some things on video that they've talked to Elliott about, and he knows how he can fix some things. He was tipping off angles and stuff. So my guess is they'll carry three goalies through the weekend, and then Allen will get sent back down. And once that happens, then we will get Karpowicz back for good, as long as Halak groin doesn't fall off again.
Or Brian Elliott doesn't get traded.
Yeah. Which we'll see. You never know. But that could be really late in the season. I think the trade deadline is late March because of the lockout. So it could be a while before anything would move on that front if they decide to try to move him. But they very well might, because if they really like what they've seen out of Allen, they may decide that it's going to be Halak and Allen next season, and they might move Elliott's contract while they can. Because every year at the trade deadline, somebody gets desperate for goaltending.
Yep.
And often it's the Leafs.
Yeah. Not this year. We're hot, baby. We're hot.
Yeah.
Leafs are playing some good hockey.
Well, we'll see how that is toward the end of the season.
Yep.
But, yeah, so far Karpowicz has not actually seen any game action in Peoria. He's just been the backup for all six games so far that he's been there.
Karp trapped up in Peoria while the rest of the Icemen are down in Florida.
Florida, yeah. Trapped in Peoria riding the bench, but he's making a lot more money.
That's
which
true.
We'll get to in a little bit. Nice tease. Yeah, we'll see what happens. The interesting thing is whenever they decide what they're going to do, it could end up bringing us more than just Karpowicz, because if they send Allen down to Peoria and then they send Karpowicz back to us, that gives us our goalie back. But on top of that, when they stop carrying three goalies, they may call a forward up because Jamie Langenbrunner is now out for the season. He suffered a torn labrum, had surgery. He's done for the year. They haven't actually called a forward up to take his spot on the roster yet. If once the goalie situation settles out, they decide to call a forward up. If one of the forwards they call up from Peoria is Chris Porter or Andy Murray, either one of them are veterans. The problem in Peoria is they've been over the veteran limit. They've got six, and they can only play five. So they've been shuffling guys in and out. And as a result, they've been carrying an extra defenseman. If they get to where they're just at the veteran limit instead of over it, then their veteran defenseman can play every game. Then they wouldn't need to carry an extra defenseman anymore. And if they do, then we could also get Brett Ponich back. He's been the odd man out. Whenever the veteran defenseman plays, Ponich has been the one who's been a scratch. So whenever Halak gets healthy, we may see Karpovich and Ponich come back, which would be nice. But at this point, we almost need more forwards than we need defensemen. We're a little healthier on the back end than we are up front, which is the opposite of what it's been for the last month plus. So who knows? Things will change before. The way this season's gone, we'll have three more injuries before either of them come back.
Yep.
So also on Tuesday the 12th, completely separately, Oliver Gabriel was activated from IR. He has, of course, been out since the skate blade leg laceration in the second game of the season. He missed 49 games.
It's awesome to have him back.
Yes, and it was cool, too. The fans chanted welcome back when he had his first shift on Wednesday. That was a nice touch. Also on Tuesday the 12th, as mentioned previously, Dan Gender was placed on team suspension by Orlando because on the 14th he signed with the Rapid City Rush in the
Valentine's
CHL.
Day.
Yeah.
Told you, it's all about Valentine's Day. The world gets wacky.
Everything
that
goes
week.
Wonky. His final numbers in Orlando, he had 18 points and was minus 12 in 27 games. Dale Mahosky is still there. He's up to 8 points and minus 3 in 24 games.
Great trade, Rich Crom.
Yeah. Yeah, that's looking better by the day, especially since Gender's gone now. So Mahovsky's the only one carrying the flag on that end of that trade. So, I think that certainly cements the fact that it was a good move to make. Moving on, Wednesday the 13th, Oliver Gabriel and Patrick Kennedy both officially returned. That was Gabriel's first game back, and Kennedy had been out with a concussion. So that kind of helped things up front. Also, Jim McKenzie was released. I think that was a case of
too many veterans.
Too many veterans.
Phil Plant coming
right.
back.
We knew that Phil was ready to come back full time, and McKenzie was like, "I don't want to just sit on reserve,
yeah,
so let
me
go."
Yeah, you got a chance to find a job.
So yeah, he was released. He ended up with 6 points in 12 games and a minus 3 and 60 penalty minutes.
Yeah,
during his time with the Icemen. Also that day, unfortunately, in the game that night against Toledo, Stefan De La Rovere sustained a concussion. So one player comes back from concussion, another one picks one up. It's like that's a trade you don't want to make.
No.
And he did not play Friday or Saturday, and as is typically the case with concussions, there's no timetable for his return. Thursday the 14th on Valentine's Day, McKenzie was claimed off of waivers by Reading, then immediately placed on team suspension because on the 15th, he also went to the CHL. He signed with the Allen Americans, so good for him. At least he found yep. work somewhere. Also on the 14th, Kalamazoo placed Brian Bisek on the 21-day IR, and I found out from Allie, his fiance, that it's because he sustained another concussion. He came back
wow.
from the car accident, and apparently his head wasn't totally right, and in a game he sustained another concussion. So he will be eligible to return from the IR before their next game here, but with concussions, you don't know if he will be healthy enough to return. So hopefully he will be, but you don't want him to rush back just to play a game when concussions are serious business. So when you get your bell rung twice in a relatively short span, you got to be really cautious going
yep.
forward. Friday the 15th, Tyler Miller was shifted to reserve. He's still out with a hip injury. Saturday the 16th, there were no moves. Sunday the 17th, as covered by USA Today and Puck Daddy and the Associated Press and all sorts of major media outlets, Wade McLeod, the first player to score a hat trick for the Icemen at the Ford Center, suffered a seizure and collapsed during a game in Springfield. He was up with the Falcons. The game was suspended after that happened. He spent a day in the hospital, but he was released on Monday, so that's good news. There's no telling how long it'll be before he actually can come back and play hockey, but at least he's out of the hospital, yep. stable, and on the road to recovery. But that's really scary stuff.
Yep. Scary and a shame. Good guy.
Yeah.
Played super well. It was a treat to get to watch him play, and you just hope all the best for him and his family.
Yeah. And he had been hot, too. In Springfield, he was finally getting regular playing time. I saw that he had, an eight-game point streak before he got hurt. So he was certainly getting into the swing of things, and, very unfortunate. But I don't know that we'll see him back this season, but hopefully he'll they'll figure out what caused it, and he'll be able to continue playing. You'd hate to see a guy's career end because of something like that, but it very well could. Separately on Sunday the 17th, before that game, Springfield called up Trent Vogelhuber, and the rumor online was that the flu was going around the Falcons' locker room, so perhaps that was just going to be a short-term deal. But now with McLeod's injury, that could end up being a long-term stay for Vogelhuber because they're going to need another forward. So,
one of the few plus players on our club, and boy, you talk about 2 weeks ago, bad losing streak. This week, two of three wins, the one being the Toledo loss, 2-1 in the last minute of the game. What's the difference? Starting to get healthy, and Trent Vogelhuber back in the lineup, and he's a fantastic line player, and he does really a lot of good for this club.
And Friday and Saturday in both the wins, Crum reunited that Dale Kennedy Vogelhuber line, and they looked, they didn't put up a ton of points, but they looked like they've looked every time they've played together this season, a stabilizing force. When you got a lead and you need to protect it, you put those three out there, and it will be protected. Because a lot of times this season, the Icemen have struggled with scoring a goal and then turning around and giving one up. And that doesn't happen as often when those three are put out there after we score. So good for Vogelhuber. Hopefully something will come of it for him, and he'll get to shine up there. But don't know how long he'll be up there. I thought the interesting takeaway from that, though, was that they called Vogelhuber up and not Moon, who has far superior offensive stats. Maybe that means they know what they've got in Moon, or maybe it means they still have inklings for keeping Vogelhuber around in the future, and they're not going to bring Moon back next year, so they want to see what Vogelhuber has up there in the A. I don't know. But I thought that was interesting. I figured if they ever had to dip into Evansville for a forward, Moon would be the guy that would get the call. But it turns out, no, it was Vogelhuber.
Cool.
Let's see. We're at Monday the 18th. There were no transactions. And that's all we have as of when we record this. One other thing worth noting, though. Tomorrow, Thursday the 21st, Matt Jens will have season-ending hip surgery. I talked to Patafi at one of the games last week, and he said it will actually be performed by one of the Chicago Blackhawks surgeons. He's a hip specialist, so Matt will be in good hands and hopefully will be ready to return at the start of next season. It's going to be, I'm sure, tough rehab, but it sounds like he has hopes of being back by October. So whether it's here or elsewhere, his career hopefully will be able to continue, but this season is over for him.
It's an interesting situation with Matt Jens, and we'll get into it a little bit more in the next segment and later on in the year. But I didn't think he played well all year. And it's one thing, you sit up in the stands, you look at some of these guys, and you think, boy, he's just not playing well. Then you find out that he's been battling this hip issue all season long. So he's a veteran. Is he? He's a captain of your club. Do you bring him back next year? Do you not bring him back? It's one of those armchair GM decisions for the offseason.
Yeah, you got veteran spots to jostle. You got putting together a defensive core that you can believe in to jostle. You've got to consider salary. And, yeah, you also have to consider how much did the hip injury affect his play, and whether it did or not, how could it affect his play going forward? Because you never know if he'll be the same player. He was on Iceman Live this week, and he talked about how when he comes back, he may have to think twice about hitting and delivering hip checks the same way he has. And that all will depend on how the surgery goes, how the rehab goes, and what the doctors tell him as far as how strong it is and how liable it is to be re-injured if he continues to play the way he has. So there's a lot of variables to consider on that front, and I would say this. The hip surgery and the injury may not hurt his case, but they absolutely will not help his case.
All right. Now, Shocker and I unveil our newest segment to the Iceman Insight Show. Take it away, Shocker.
All right. This is something we had a lot
of fun. You try to explain this.
We had a lot of fun doing these. We talked about it during our last show. And basically, these are a ridiculously silly spoof of the Real Men of Genius ad campaign for an unnamed alcoholic beverage. And I think that's one of the greatest ad campaigns ever done. There are so many of them, and they're so funny, and they're so well done. And we couldn't come close to replicating the quality. But that doesn't mean we can't take a stab at it and have some fun in the process. So I don't know if we're going to do these every week. I don't know how many of them we'll end up doing. We've already recorded a bunch of them. I have raw audio that I still have to edit together for everything beyond this one. But we are premiering
raw
this feature.
It's audio.
Yes, it's very raw. And the final product is pretty darn raw, too. But this is our first Real Men of Genius spot. This is dedicated to a man whose birthday is tomorrow. The 21st is Chris LeMond's birthday. And for those who don't know Chris LeMond, he has been an Iceman fan since season one. He has the largest hockey jersey collection of anyone I think I've ever known. And
he's a goaler
in the
B-League.
And we know goalie equals weird.
Weird.
And I guess this is a tribute not only to Chris LeMond, but the fact that he is indeed weird. This is our first ever Iceman Insights version of Real Men of Genius. Iceman Insights presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Wear a Kilt to a Hockey Game Guy.
Mr. Wear a Kilt to a Hockey Game Guy.
You eschew traditional attire like jeans and instead wear a kilt, gladly showing off those definitionless cylinders you call legs.
Hello, Big Bird!
While others may scoff at your fashion choice, you just smile because the cool breeze on your little bagpipe is quite refreshing.
Is it chilly in here?
But for you, keeping warm at a hockey game is never a problem because your kilt makes you so hot.
I am sizzling!
So we salute you, O promoter of the plaid, because when it comes to serious infractions at a hockey game, you put the gross in gross misconduct.
Mr. Wear a Kilt to a Hockey Game Guy.
IcemanManiac.com, WYIR, Evansville, Indiana.
Now Iceman Insights with Michael Shockley.
And Daddy.
And Daddy.
And back here, Iceman Insights, the Shocker, the Dirty D, Ivylicious, playing her Nintendo DS, talking Iceman hockey.
We got to thank her
everything
for
else.
The excellent yep. intro for our third segment.
And we're going to talk a little bit about player salaries.
Yeah. Last week we didn't do a show, but as promised, I posted a story on IcemanManiacs.com and ProHockeyNews.com about player salaries. And Puck Daddy, as mentioned previously, linked to it.
The Puck Daddy.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome if we got to talk to him and Jeff Merrick sometime on their podcast.
That would be
try to make
cool.
Try to do that.
Yeah, I'll get to that. My one link that they've ever linked is that means I got connections with Puck Daddy now.
That's right.
I'm not going to regurgitate the entire story. If you want all the gritty details, you can go to IcemanManiacs.com and read it. But a few things of note that I thought were particularly interesting and worth discussing here. I started the story out by talking about Nathan Moon. The Iceman announced a week and a half or 2 weeks ago that Nathan Moon will be donating $25 to the March of Dimes for every goal he scores between February 1st and March 3rd, which is a span of 14 games. So far, there are 6 games left in that stretch, and he's scored 2 goals, so that's $50. Smart bet is it'll probably end up being a total donation of around $100, maybe up to $200 if he has a really hot game. But the point of the story is $100 or $200 in the world of professional sports might sound like chump change, but in the ECHL, it really is not. In the ECHL, a player who is property of an NHL or AHL affiliate, a guy like a Moon, when they are sent down to the ECHL, they make $525 a week. The 13 different players that the Icemen have had this season that are affiliate owned, among those 13, the average AHL salary when they're in the A is $2,000 per week. So when they come down here, they're basically doing the same job for a quarter of the pay,
yeah.
essentially. And, of course, in the NHL, among those 13, their average is over $20,000 per week. So if any of them make it up to the show, they're really getting a hefty pay raise. But the big difference and the more realistic, if it's a guy that's coming into the ECHL, he's probably not going to see NHL action this season unless something really crazy happens. But when they come back and forth between the A and the E, there is a major difference in pay. For non-affiliate players, their salaries are not made public, but most are in the range of $500 to $1,000 a week. And keep in mind, while $1,000 a week may sound pretty good, they're only paid during the regular season and playoffs.
Yeah.
So that's $1,000 a week for essentially half the year, and the other half of the year they're not paid a dime. So while $1,000 a week doesn't sound bad, it's still not crazy. It would average out to about $500 a week, and if they're only making $500 a week, that averages out to about $250 a week, which I don't know about you, but I think we both make more than that.
No.
So anyway, in the ECHL, the salary cap is $12,400 per week for the entire team, which equates...
So that $525, even though the Icemen aren't paying it for affiliate players, still goes against the salary cap?
Yes.
Got it.
It counts toward the cap, but it is paid by the affiliate team. So yeah, $12,400 per week for the entire team, which equates to $310,000 for the full team for the full season. Compare that to, in the NHL, the minimum individual player salary is $525,000. So the minimum salary in the NHL is more than an entire ECHL team makes in a whole season. In the AHL, there is no cap and there's no maximum individual salary. Most players make in the range of $50,000 to $100,000 a year, and the minimum is $40,500 per season. So that tells you what the big step up is there. And then, of course, in the NHL, the cap is $70.2 million. It'll go down some next year, but still lots of millions of dollars.
Yep.
Shea Weber, making $14 million this year, is the highest paid player in the NHL this season. To put this really in perspective, Shea Weber makes more money in two games than an entire ECHL team makes in a whole season. So that was, I thought, perhaps the most stunning part of the entire story. Also, additional perspective, if all 23 ECHL teams spend to the cap every week, the entire league's payroll for players is $7.13 million for the whole season. This season in the NHL, there are 22 players who make more than that individually.
Including Scott Gomez, who doesn't even have a job. Right. Where did he end up getting picked up in?
I think San Jose.
San Jose did pick him up. Okay.
So, yeah, 22 NHL players make more than the entire ECHL combined. If that doesn't really tell you the difference between the levels, I don't know what does. And speaking of Karpovich specifically, $525 a week here. When he's called up to Peoria, $2,054. Cody Beach, when he's here, $525. When he's in Peoria, $2,143. Alan York, $525 when he's here, $2,321 when he's in Springfield. That's just three of the 13 affiliate players. The other 10, you can see their NHL versus the AHL versus their ECHL pay, all on IcemanManiacs.com. I think the take-home from all of this is, yes, housing is paid, health insurance is paid, and that's a big help. That there's no questioning that that makes a big difference, and it makes the money seem not as big of a deal that they're not being paid a ton of money as far as their quote-unquote salary. But still, nobody is getting rich in the ECHL. Most of these guys are making less than $25,000 a year. An AHL promotion is quadruple the pay, and NHL is way more than that. And going over to Europe, like Sebastian Wanstrom did, is way more than what they're making here, and probably in his case, more than he would have been making in the AHL, too. So the whole point of this is nobody's getting rich in the ECHL, and when guys chase the money, quote-unquote, to go elsewhere because they get a more lucrative deal, don't blame them.
Yep. I think the other thing that we're hoping to do is making up a little bit of a spreadsheet, giving all of our Iceman Maniacs an opportunity to build your own team. Start looking at the Brandon Marinos and Eric Giosas up in Fort Wayne, because all those contracts will be coming due at the end of the season, and you can be better than Crom and build your own team, put the salary amounts where you want to put the salary amounts, and if you want to assume you're going to keep the same affiliations with some of those players, and you put that 525 in there, but we'll make a little Excel spreadsheet so that everyone can have some fun and juggle the numbers and see how easy or difficult it is to be a GM of an ECHL team. And maybe even we'll get an Aaron Jens or a Matt Jens to come in and say, hey, we're going to offer you $400 a week because that's the only way I can fit you into my spreadsheet.
Yeah.
And we'll edit out some of their comments, and we'll see how well that works as far as it goes at the bargaining table.
Their comments wouldn't be allowed on air. The FCC would be calling in a hurry.
So interesting stuff there for sure. And then we've got a new ECHL CBA as well.
Yeah, kind of in the same ballpark as the salary talk is.
On Valentine's Day.
On Valentine's Day.
I tell you, things go crazy that week.
The ECHL and the Professional Hockey Players Association, the PHPA, announced that they have agreed on the terms of a new five-year CBA, which will take it through the 2017-2018 season. The current four-year CBA expires at the end of this season, so agreeing to a new one ensures there won't be a strike, there won't be a lockout, there will be no work stoppage of any kind in the ECHL for the next 5 years, which is good for us. There really weren't any earth-shattering changes to the terms. Minor annual increases in the salary cap and minimum salaries and per diem payments, things like that. There were a few things worth noting. First off, the season will still be 72 games, so 36 home games per team. But it will be spread out over one more week. They're expanding the regular season from 25 weeks to 26, which basically means you might get one or two more weekend games and one or two less weekday games, and also maybe one or two less situations of 3-3 or four games in 5 days or something like that. So spread it out a little bit better, which probably will be the biggest effect on the box office more so than anything, but it could help as far as players getting less injured perhaps if there's a little more time between games and it's a little more spread out. Because as we've seen in the NHL this year, when you compact the schedule, guys get hurt a lot more.
Oh my gosh. I was thinking about that too. We're excited about having Oliver Gabriel come back, but I think that very same day is when Eric Karlsson, mm-hmm. Norris Trophy winner for the Ottawa Senators, Matt Cook, checked him, kind of looking, trying to set his foot somewhere and got inside that Achilles tendon protector, and that was it. And it's just horrible. But a lot of injuries all across the NHL.
Yeah. Well, and that too, that gives you pause for Gabriel that his was in the muscle of his leg a few inches above that. And that's proof that the difference it could make, though, because if Gabriel gets sliced 3 inches lower, it probably is an Achilles injury, and if that's the case, he's not back right now. He's done. His year is over, and he, at best case scenario, he's talking about coming back in October for next season. So, that was a scary injury with Karlsson, and you hate to see anybody, whether they're on a team you like or the team you don't like. It's always scary when guys that are playing this game that we love get hurt seriously as part of the game. It's an unfortunate part of it, but it's just part of the risk that they take. You can make big money and make dreams come true in this game, but it can take them away in a heartbeat, too.
Yep.
Also in the CBA, rosters will have one extra slot for the first 30 days of each season, which was the case this year due to the NHL lockout. I assume that means the GMs liked having that extra spot for a little extra player evaluation. And part of that also may tie into the season being a week longer, because if they start the season a week sooner, they haven't said if it'll be starting a week sooner or ending a week later. If they started a week sooner, that means there's less time after NHL and AHL camps end for things to sort themselves out. So that would make sense. So those two moves may be related. The other thing worth noting is the veteran limit will remain at 4, but the league has said that they will now allow one player per team to be designated as a player assistant coach. But that is not exempt from the vet limit. So if your player assistant coach is a veteran, it still counts toward the 4. I haven't gotten a response from the league asking how that's going to affect salary issue. My guess is that basically this player coach role will allow you to pay one of your veterans more money, and only X percent of their salary will count toward the cap, and the rest will be his quote-unquote coach's salary. So we'll see how that works, but that was an interesting change, I think. And
can we call it the Sam Fatoric rule? Sammy Fatoric playing for Toledo, and He's 37 years old now, and Brian Patafee is a big fan of his. He's the son of former Devils coach Robbie Fatorik, and he says he's going right to coaching. He is so smart. He knows how to talk to players and everything else, so it'll be interesting to see if he's one of the first player assistant coaches in the ECHL.
Well, and that could be, you know, even though the veteran limit's not changing, that could affect the status of Todd Robinson next year. If money is part of the issue, and if Crom's building his roster and says, I'd like to have Todd back, but I don't want to pay him as much money as will require to bring him back because then I have less flexibility elsewhere in the roster, maybe bringing him back as a player coach allows you to pay him more and not take up as much cap room. Therefore, you could still build a better roster around him. So even if the veteran limit doesn't change, just having that position and however they work the salary structure out could help guys like Todd play a little longer.
Todd Robinson will be an interesting discussion for more than one reason as we get near the end of the season and we start doing our armchair GMing. But what do you do with a guy that is top 10 point producer but worse plus minus?
Yeah.
And he is beginning to – he's got a role. He's a specialist, but he's not a five-on-five player on your top line.
Right.
You got to start asking those questions. Can he handle that job or not? And that minus 29 or whatever it is.
Yeah. I think right now he's up to minus pi.
Nice.
Oh, wait, no. Minus infinity.
Yes.
Minus pi would be an upgrade.
Yeah,
minus
that would
29.
Be 2 point, et cetera,
3.14, et cetera. Oh, whatever. 9.62.
It's not optimum.
Yes, that's it. It's not optimum.
So, Iceman trivia. I'm hot.
Yeah, you are hot. You've got two in a row right. You are now 3-6 on the season.
3-6.
You are clawing your way back toward the vicinity of 500.
Just like the Iceman.
Yeah, just like the Iceman. If you were in the Western Conference, though, you'd
yes,
be on
I'd
the
be in
edge
the playoffs.
Of a playoff berth. This one goes back to last, actually 2 seasons ago. On August 19th, 2010, the Iceman announced the hiring of Rich Crom as head coach and GM for the team's first CHL season. That was the last season at Swander. 6 days after Crom was announced, the team's first two AA player signings were announced. Goaltender Matt Lundin, Maine Black Bear, and a veteran defenseman from Winnipeg. Who was that defenseman? No Googling or HockeyDB.
I am not doing any of those things. And I have my answer.
All right, what is it?
My answer is going to be Mario Larocq.
Incorrect.
Ah, dang it.
Larocq is from Quebec.
I didn't. I was just trying to think of someone from that team.
He was a veteran defenseman, though. He was just not from Winnipeg. And he wasn't the first one announced. The first defenseman announced for that season was none other than Jordan Little.
Ah, rats.
He played 7 professional seasons, including his last 2 with the Icemen, but of course he only played 8 games in that last season and had to retire due to concussions. He is currently an assistant coach for the Huntsville Havoc in the SPHL.
He got us Derek Fome, who is continuing to play in South Carolina.
Indeed. So the Benini's record falls to 3-7.
Sorry, all my fans out there.
Maybe we should do a
Ivy.
We should do a Real Men of Genius trivia champion and tribute to you.
There you go, Brian Patafee. Tweet of the week. Did you see he got blocked by somebody? I'm assuming it's that Augusta Rivers Hawk GM.
Probably so. Yeah. Well, when you're outspoken, sometimes you rub people the wrong way. And
would be sweet.
If they can't handle the truth, then
that's
tough.
Right.
Again, as we've mentioned before, you can follow Iceman Athletic Trainer and weekly amusement park guest Brian Patafee on Twitter. His handle is bpatafee. The tweet this week is actually a couple weeks old, but I thought it was a funny one. Patafee said, quote, Comic Con opens in Ottawa in May. A big hello to all the prospective attendees. I apologize for beating you up in high school. End quote.
Nice.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty good.
He is up to 215 followers.
Ooh.
So, taking him a little bit longer to get to 1,000 than
he
thought.
Wanted, yeah.
But well on his way, that is for sure.
He'll get there sooner or later.
Yep.
Before Twitter falls off and no one uses it anymore.
Like MySpace. I still love MySpace. I don't use it anymore, but MySpace was so much cooler than Facebook, in my opinion. Definitely not Twitter. Upcoming games, all on the road. Next home game is the following Thursday.
Yep. The team is in sunny, beautiful Florida this week. tonight at Orlando. This is a game that was originally scheduled for Sunday, which is how it's listed on the pocket schedules.
Ah.
But, I don't know if they had a scheduling issue in Orlando or if the league just decided to not saddle the Icemen with 3 games in 3 days on the road or what. But, yeah, the game was originally going to be Sunday the 24th, but it is now going to be tonight at Orlando. And then Friday and Saturday, the Icemen play at Florida against the defending champion Everblades. And then, yes, after that, the next home game is Thursday next week, the 28th, against Toledo, which is now going to be another Star Wars night.
Really?
Yeah, they announced that over the weekend, that they're doing a second Star Wars night, because I don't think that game had any promotions. So I guess they got in touch with the folks who come dressed in character. And
the nerds. You can call them nerds. The nerds have been alerted.
The people that Patafi stuffed in their lockers.
Yep.
Yeah, so Star Wars night again on Thursday the 28th against the Toledo Walleye. Be time to go fishing again.
Yep, sounds good. Any final thoughts?
Well, a couple things. First off, we didn't get to do Amusement Park After Dark this past Friday after the Iceman Comets game, as we had hoped. Mrs. Benigni was a little under the weather.
Yes, it is not a baby in her belly.
Yeah.
It has been confirmed.
So, she was a little under the weather, so we didn't get to do it. We are still going to try to do it probably after the regular season finale against Kalamazoo on March 23rd. So
yep.
Mark your calendars. Also, this Saturday, the 23rd, worth mentioning, is the Arena Ice Racing Show at the Ford Center.
That sounds so cool.
We're wondering how it's going to tear up the ice, if it will.
Don't care.
And I will actually be going. My parents are coming down from Indy this weekend. We're going to go. We got some free tickets from Mr. Rickard.
Nice.
So didn't have to pay a dime, courtesy of Power Rock 93.9, WKTG, and Stephen
Rickard. Come on. I'll be selling that stuff on my radio station. I did hear, speaking of which, I thought about it earlier, I believe Stephen Rickard's groin fell off one time as well.
I don't want to know anything about Stephen Rickard's groin.
I'm just throwing it out there.
Yikes. I just threw up in my mouth a little bit. Maybe I got a baby in my belly.
No, could be. It's not mine. I'm not responsible.
Yeah.
I don't want to be responsible anymore.
So, yeah, thanks to Stephen for the tickets. I'm looking forward to it. I think that ice racing show is going to be interesting, if nothing else. But, yeah, hopefully it doesn't tear the ice up too much, because Lord knows the ice is bad enough at the Ford Center to begin with.
Don't care. Tear it up. Sounds cool. Give me free tickets, Stephen.
But, yeah, that's all I got as far as final thoughts.
So, sounds good. That's about it. We'll be back here next Wednesday. You've been listening to the one, the only, Michael Shockley, senior writer, webmaster, vice president of Offbeat Shenanigans, and Puck Daddy Link.
Yeah.
Right here on 96.9, the Music Bomb. And we'll be back next week with a nice Florida wrap-up and a Brian Patafi sunbathed in studio.
Yeah.
It'd be funny if he left looking like Brian Patafi and he comes back looking like Fabio or something like that.
Or Terry Vicarelli. Wow.
See y'all later.
We'll see you on the radio.
The puck is in. The home team wins the good old hockey game.